course, last week we were talking about the prohibition of looking at Makamas and Kusa Shabbat, and one's not allowed to look at the parts of one's wife's body that he usually covers, and she's in Ida. Different opinions what exactly that means, they usually covered. And we ended off, I think, with the middle of the Chuvas Nei Devihud, and the Devihud discusses if it's necessary for the husband to supervise his wife going to the mikvah. There's no mikvah woman around. So he has to wash to see if she goes under the water. So then Devihud has the tzad to say that that's okay, even though he's seeing her when she is in Ida, but since the whole concern is lest they come to be chayte, she's going under the water in a minute, so obviously nothing's going to go wrong. So he brings us a potential raya, a question in the Rishonim, a story that happened with the Sami Kutzi. Sami Kutzi was one of the Bali Atoysis. He was named as Shimshon Mikutzi. The reason why he was called the Tsar is because otherwise he would have been called the Rash Mikutzi. Rash means a poor man. So they flipped the letters to make it sound like he wasn't such a rich man. He wasn't a Tsar, he wasn't an officer, he wasn't a king. But they called him the Tsar Mikutzi. Because they called him the Tsar Mikutzi, so that was a fiction story that was written in the 1800s by Marcus Lehman. He was a rabbi in Germany, and he wrote all these like these novels in Jewish history, like these fictitious Jewish history stories, some true, some not so true, to try to give kids, Jewish kids, something. It was 100 years before Rothschild novels. That was his thing. So he had a famous book, a whole famous story about the Count of Kutzi, a whole wild story about the Sami Kutzi with the Crusades, with Richard the Liar, a crazy wild story, all working with the assumption, or lack thereof, that this one of his relatives was a Sai. He was Mishkin Tsar, he didn't care anything, he was nothing to do with the Crusades, but Imkos, then he called him the Count of Kutzi. I remember when I was a kid, so before there were any art school novels, this was like the only thing that kids had to read, so this is a famous story. I was disappointed years later when I came to the realization that the whole story wasn't true. Anyway, so the true story about the Sami Kutzi is what the Rishonim quote, the Mordechai quotes, that that the Sami Kutzi had a question about his own wife's tefillah, because apparently she had some scabs in the part of the body. It's hard for her to see exactly when the scabs were removed properly, not removed properly. The whole question in the Rishonim, we'll talk about this hopefully later on, we get to tefillah and chatzitzas, about what the status of scabs are vis-a-vis tefillah. So the Sami Kutzi wanted that his wife should remove the scabs, which were movable, not movable, the whole long of the story. But she couldn't even tell herself whether the scabs were removed. So the Rishonim quote that he would actually look at her before she went to the mikveh. He would inspect the back, whatever part of the body she couldn't see. He would inspect to make sure that the scabs were removed properly. So then if you direct me, he would look at her. He would look at parts of the body that were exposed. So the answer is she was going to the mikveh. She's going to the mikveh in a minute from now. So whenever she's going to the mikveh in a minute from now, that's okay. That's what we pass in mikveh din, that her husband is permitted to look at his wife when she's about to go down to the mikveh. The other part of that shoe that Navida we both spoke about a couple weeks ago, the Navida raises the question, is he even allowed to hold her hand at that point? Because he's trying to help her go down. She's totally in the frozen lake. She's afraid to go down by herself, so can she be supported by her husband? So that's a little bit more chomer, because there is mamish touching her, she's still a nida. So one could argue that the touching at that point is negiyah shlomo derechiba. That's not a very romantic touch, that's just holding on for dear life. So the Giyash Lama Derechiba is not a Nisadira Isa, it's only a Nisadira, but it's part of the Hachakas. And whenever it's part of the Hachakas born into it, according to the next, maybe the 2 minutes before she goes to the Mikvah. If it would have been a Deraisa, so then Deraisa is no exception to that rule. But it would be only, it's only a Derabana, and the nature of the Derabana is a Gezeira Atu having relations. So one can argue that that Gezeira wouldn't apply in the circumstances, but it's so unlikely they're going to say thing, because she's going to the Mikvah in a moment's time. That was just the Shiraya from the So now we move on to the next series of our focus. And those are the different malachas, different jobs that a woman should not be doing at the time when she is a nida. The context of the swing is in the second service, where the Gemara talks about nidi mamonis involved in husband and wife when they get married. There are certain monetary obligations between husband and wife. The husband is obligated to support his wife, he has to feed her, he has to clothe her, and the wife is obligated to do certain kinds of household jobs. She has to cook, she has to clean, she has to do the laundry, different things. If the two of them decide to enter into an agreement that is different, it's not written in stone, these rules, She could, he and she could decide whatever they want. So they want to decide that that she's not going to cook, she's not going to take out all the time, so they can do whatever the two of them want. But if all else is normal, so the Mishnayos and the Gemara is described that there are certain understood requirements that the husband has towards the wife and the wife has towards the husband. The Gemara says that the basic requirement of that the husband has to support the wife, and therefore, with the wife, let's say if she takes an outside job, in the days of Chazal, it was very unlikely. Most women didn't work outside of the home. But if she would take some kind of a job, she had some kind of a skill, and she would make some money, so then that money would go to the husband. Since the husband is supporting her, so it's only right that she should provide her salary, she goes straight to the husband. So the Gemara says that that din, that his support in lieu of her salary, was made for her benefit. It wasn't made for his benefit. Because most of the time, women didn't have the ability to work. And therefore, the way to protect her, to make sure that she gets provided for, is to make this institution that she should give whatever couple of pennies she brings in terms of salary, and he'll have to make sure to support her. Let's say she's making a lot of money, and she's able to support herself, and she's able to support him. She'd rather keep her money herself. So she has the right to say, Eini Zayni Sveini Yaisa. That she has the right to say, even though her husband doesn't want this deal, she has the right to say, Eini Zayni Sveini Yaisa, that I don't want to be supported by you, but I don't want to work for you either. I'm making $500,000, and I don't need your couple of pennies for a weekly allowance. I'll provide myself and put my money, rest of my money in my savings. So the Gemara says she's allowed to do that, because since the takana of him providing her food and she providing the salary, that takana was made the toelas, the toelas aisha. So whenever you have a takana sacham and mamanis that was made for your particular benefit, you have a right to overturn that takana. But again, under normal circumstances, so he's providing the food, she's doing certain work in the house. So the Gemara says in the Masechet Ketubos that even though she does work in the house, there are certain malachas that she's not allowed to do when she is in need. That's what the Shulchan Aruch quotes in the 10th and page 18. So page 18, my mocha number 10. Kol malacha she'isha osa levayla, nida osa levayla. All the things that a woman has to do with, for the husband, she's allowed to cook when she's in need, she's allowed to clean when she's in need, she's allowed to do the laundry when she's in need. But there are certain malachas that she's not allowed to do when she's in need. Osa lechutzu bezigis akos. She's not allowed to do bezigis akos, and she's not allowed to pour a cup of wine. So normally, part of the woman's presentation at the meal, she's going to give him a cup of wine, she's going to prepare for him a cup of wine, but she's a nida, so that she's not allowed to do that. That's considered to be too close for comfort. That's one of the things that she's not allowed to do. So then the Gemara speaks about some of the other malachas. We'll talk about it as we go on. So the first one of these isurim of Mezigas HaKos, so Shulchan Aruch says, Shasur Limzog HaKos Befanav. So she's not allowed to pour him the cup of wine when he's sitting there. If she prepares the cup of wine before he comes into the room, that would be okay. So she's not allowed to prepare the cup of wine and then to bring the cup of wine onto the table. Unless she does it in an abnormal fashion. We already spoke about this in the past. That sometimes when things are done out of the ordinary, that's a mafdir in Hilchos HaMalkus. She should put it down with her left hand. So instead of putting it on the table, she should put it on the pillow or something, put it on the side. Even if she's doing it with her right hand. So as long as she does it, that will be okay. So there's a big machlekes in the Rishon. What exactly this phrase is all about, Mezigas HaKos. The term Limzok HaKos, familiar from Maseches Pesachim, from the Seder, in the days of the Gemara, so wine was stored, very, very harsh, sharp, the strong wine itself was stored in the barrels. They would bring some of the wine to the table, then they would have to dilute the wine with water. You couldn't drink the wine the way it was. That's what's called Mezigas HaKos. So when the Mishnah says in Pesachim, Mezigas HaKos, that they would prepare the cup of wine, then they would start to say the Seder, start to say the Manishtana. So it doesn't mean like we do, pour the wine out of the bottle. Our wine is already pre-diluted. Our wine is already mostly water anyway. In the days of Chazal, you would mamish dilute the wine at the meal itself. So, mazgul, Mishnah says in Pesachim, mazgul of kosheni, they would dilute the second cup, the kind of being shown, then the kid would say Manishtana. So what we do with Manazaz, we don't dilute the wine. We pour the wine out of the bottle. That's the best we can do. So we make a make-believe Mezigas HaKos. So some Rishonim say that this whole issur Mezigas HaKos doesn't apply to Manazaz. We don't do Mezigas HaKos anymore. We just do pouring cups of wine. Maybe the whole thing doesn't exist. So we usually don't assume that way. We usually, many assume that Mezigas HaKos doesn't mean only diluting the wine. It means presentation of a cup of wine. Perhaps it would also be a problem. So we take a look at the Shach on that Ma'amokam number 10. So Kosov Habach, Umetzasi Kosov, Bidroshos Ma'arash Mi'ostreich. that I found written in the drushes of a Rosh. I don't know who this Rosh was. Maybe he was also a Tsar. From the Rosh, but Ostreich. I can tell you where he came from. He came from Austria. He said, the Shalokin din osim of Balabatim. So the Marash Biostrach writes, that's not right what people do, that the wives serve them meals, the wives bring the plates, bring the food, and they put them on the, in front of the husbands on the table when the wife is in Ida, that she'll like it in, because that's the same as Mezigas HaKois. That's quite a chiddush. The Marash Biostrach is learning that Mezigas HaKois is loved Dafka HaKois. It has nothing to do with a cup of wine. It means all bring your food. It's not right for the wife to bring food to the husband, put it directly on the table when she's in Ida. So the Rashi Ostrech understood that wine is loved after wine, not specifically wine. It means all presentations of all things is all the same thing. However, he says there is some Rishonim who say if your rain says that even by wine itself, the issur is only if you dilute the wine and you present the wine. Either one without the other is mutter. So he says for sure. When you bring a cup of water, or you bring a piece of kugel, bring a bowl of ice cream, so you're not doing mezigah, some mezigah, those kinds of foods. So for sure, would be mutter. Chayin lemashivas arash, but the mezigah is yayin b'mayim dafkas v'asham mashim. But Rashba says, like Henry suggested, maybe the whole thing only applies to wine, doesn't apply to other drinks, and it makes a lot of sense. Wine is wine. Wine is something that's a little bit adds a little more intimacy. Inam mezigim in a klik v'shan osim sharu d'bikar enkepeda. So he says he's not so sure that this whole thing is true. So he's back and forth and back and forth. And he says that, however, there are other sources that seem to support this idea of the Rashba Ostreich, and the Shach seems at the end of the day, he says, to be long to the bottom, that's what I'm doing is, that's what we practice. So even though, again, we're not 100% sure that this is even correct, this whole idea of extending this out of the realm of wine, but that has become the minute. So unlike the people who the Rashba Ostreich is criticizing for not following this, so I'm doing is we try to follow this. And therefore, a wife should not put the food directly on the table in front of the husband. She should put it in a way of a derech shinoi. So if her husband's not sitting in his seat right now, if he's in the kitchen or something, she just puts it down, that's fine. But if he's sitting there, so she shouldn't present him the piece of cake directly in front of him. She should either put it down with her left hand, or she should put it down on the side of the table somewhere. She should make it in a way that's a little bit of a shinoi to avoid this problem. That's the first of the surim of Mezigas HaKos.
But it seems like the isus on her, not on...
To both of them.
Because shuni is only to her, then to the person who's the recipient.
No, they're both. It takes two tangles. They're both part of this. The issue applies in both directions also. If he serves her, it's also a problem.
Right, but if he even shinui, choshesh about chiva and about something as a result of that act, then the recipient itself should be participant and have some type of problem with it also, because you should do it with the left hand, the shinui is not enough. In words, it doesn't stop the recipient from having...
No, it's a reminder. The bottom line is it's a reminder. It means it's like eating together. The couple shouldn't be eating together, but there's something funny on the table, so that reminds them that she's in Ida. These are, that the whole institution hacker that Chazal gave us is just simply to serve as a wake up. They shouldn't forget that she's in Ida. The Poskim quote that when it comes to wine, so we're very, very machbir when it comes to wine in Hilchos Nida. Not only is she not supposed to bring him a cup of wine, it's more chomer than bringing him the bowl of ice cream, she should put the cup of wine in front of him, but you shouldn't send her a cup of wine to drink, even if he's not handing it to her, even if he's not putting it directly in front of her. Just the mere fact that he designates a cup of wine for her, that in and of itself is a problem. The shloch l'chol shel yayin should not be done. Plus, we have a whole discussion about Kiddush. When the husband drinks, makes Kiddush, he drinks a little of the wine, and then he sends the cup over to his wife. So the fact that she's drinking his leftovers, that's not a problem. We spoke about this in the past. We said that, according to some Rishonim, he's not permitted to eat her leftovers. If from the same plate, from the same cup, but not vice versa. We weren't sure exactly where this whole thing came from, but Lamai said that's what some of the Rishonim, right? So that in and of itself wouldn't be a problem. The problem is that since it's wine, so just the mere designating a cup of wine for her would be a problem. The Poskim write that, let's say it's just the husband and wife home alone, so we shouldn't pour a little bit of the cup into a cup and then have her come and take the cup. That's the problem. If you have guests and a lot of people at the table, he just pours a couple of cups here and there, so then there's some Poskim on making on that. But if it's just the two of them around, and he wants to give a little bit of kosher bracha, so that's not really right to do. So she doesn't drink the kosher kiddush, the world won't come to an end. So she doesn't drink the cup of kiddush. He gets the kiddush even without drinking. So she tries to do it in a way that, or let's say he finishes the drink, he drinks his cup of wine, and then he puts the cup of wine down, and then he goes to wash, and she comes and takes a little to sip. That's okay, but it shouldn't be that he sends her a cup of wine. That's also extended, part of this extended disarchon. There's a second malacha that a wife usually does to the husband that she shouldn't be doing when she's a nida. That's what's called that tzoras hamita. Tzoras hamita literally means like to make the bed. So the Gemara says that the issur of making the bed is only befunav, it's only when he's around. If he went to work and she's cleaning up the room, she's making up the beds now, that's okay. But if he's sitting there and she's making the bed in his presence, that's a problem. So Tosfos on the 11th of the Rambam Kamis writes, "Tzas amita." You really read that tzas amita. How kind of priestess has dinin shodav shulchiba v'latzas karm k'sasish in and of shulchiba shalanida. So the Ri says that refers to the spreading of the sheets, the blankets, those kinds of things. But if she's like putting the mattresses or things into place, she's putting a mattress or something. Those are not dvarim shulchiba. Basically, it means that we call today making the bed. She's making the bed nice and cozy and comfy. So he shouldn't be watching her doing that in his bed. That's conjuring up the wrong image at the time when she's in either. So that should, if it's going to be done by the wife, he should make his own bed in the morning. That's also a good idea. But if for whatever reason he doesn't, so she should wait until he's out of the room before she makes up the bed.
her bed, if she makes her own bed. That's okay.
He can't make her. Yeah, she can make her bed
in front of him.
Yeah, she can make her own bed. Yeah. The Marek Suba says the third thing that she shouldn't do is that she shouldn't be Rochetzes Yodav Ravim. She shouldn't be washing him. Shouldn't be helping him shower. So the question is, what does that mean? Shouldn't be helping him shower? So the Shulchan Aruch in the 12th of the Rambam Kamos writes that Asura Litzak L'mayim Luchos Panav Yodav Rag. Love a few in Ogaz, love a few in Mayim Tzadim. So obviously, when the Gemara says that she's not allowed to help him shower, the Rishonim write that can't mean she's not allowed to mamish veidim. She's not allowed to water. She's not allowed to touch him. They can't even touch the Lava Derechim. Obviously, she can't wash him up in the shower. So what it must mean is that she can't even pour water on him for showering. In the olden days, before there was modern plumbing, basically a shower was, if you were lucky, so you had a pot of water, and you heated up the pot of water, and then you stood in somewhere in the house, you didn't want to get ruined, so outside or something, you took the pot of water and you put it over your head. That was the shun. That was your shower. So she shouldn't do that to him. Because that's also considered to be part of the chuk. That's something that we usually associate with a little bit of intimacy. So she shouldn't do that when she is in either. So obviously she can't literally bathe him. It's for sure out of the question. But even if she pour the water onto him, is a problem.
Would you say that she couldn't turn the water on?
Oh, so that's a shiloh. Oh, so that's a shiloh. That's the post-Kanavish question. How far does this go? So even in the early books, before modern day plumbing, the post already had a shiloh. About how far does this go? Does this include, let's say she's not going to be the one to dump the water over him. She's going to be she's preparing the water. She's bringing the water. She's putting the water in place, filling up a bowl for him to dump on his own head. Is that okay or not? So some folks can say, yeah, that's okay. That's a bit too far removed. So she can't literally wash him. That's obvious. She can't pour the water on, and that's what the Gemara meant that ain't a rechatzis. But to prepare a bowl of water for him, why not? And other folks can say, no, that's also included in the issur. But anything with bathing, that's off limits. So that's what we try to do. So that would be the nefkah meal, let's say, today. Could she make a tub for him? Could she fill up the bathtub for him? Could she turn on the shower for him? Those kinds of things. So we would try to avoid, unless he's not standing there. If he's not in the room, so then that would be okay. But if he's standing there, so then she shouldn't do that. Most people, Baruch Hashem, are able to turn on their own showers. And for whatever reason, he's a chayil and he can't. That'll be part of the coolers that we talk about. Hachakas v'macham chol. We've got a lot of coolers about hachakas v'macham chol coming up in the next part of the city.
Is Matzah Samita, is that also referring to like putting on like the sheets of the bed? Or
yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think that's called like a little bit called derech chibos. Yeah, I think so.
But if the husband's
down the room, it's okay. Right, that's fine. The post-Rabbi Shaila about the Tilus Yadayim. about, can she fill up a cup of water from it? There's not a lot of people do this, but usually common, you know, Derech Eretz is, when you wash the Tilsi Daiva, there's somebody behind you, so you fill up the cup of water for them to wash next. So the question is she permitted to do that when she is in Nida? So some person say, no, some person she can't fill up Negelbas, she can't fill up Tilsi Daiva. That's all considered to be part of the Yisr of Rochetzis, part of your miracles. Again, assuming, like the first group of Boskin, if you hold that the Yisr was only on the pouring of the water on him, so that would only mean she can't literally wash his hands from him, she's probably not going to do that. But if you mach, like we try to be, that even the filling up of water for the bath of the Yisr, would that apply to Tilsi Daiva? So some Boskin say yes, some Boskin don't. Boskin will say that it applies, it's the same thing. Rochetzis Yodav, that's the problem. Boskin will say no, say, come on, Tilsi Daiva, that's not exactly. Derechiba, that's what Chazal met when the guy's standing getting ready to take a shower, take a bathtub. That's considered to be Derechiba. The guy's washing Negovas in the morning, washing those time for a meal. So that's not considered to be a problem. So Yesh V'Yesh, there are different opinions in the contemporary poskim about just how far this the shadow goes.
So, in
Menorot,
if you have a lot of people at the table, and so usually you don't want to show someone that she's in need of. So in the case back to the Yayin, and he's pouring it, and she takes his cup, you know, she sits next to him, and only he puts his cup down.
He puts his cup down.
So if he puts his cup down, she can take.
Yeah, if he puts it down, he doesn't do anything special, doesn't pour for the thing. He finishes drinking his cup, and there's a little bit of wine left, he puts it down, she wants to take some.
But it would be the same type of thing to, like, go out of your way to show that she...
You don't have to go out of your way to it. You don't have to make a fuss that she's in either. But yeah, he's trying to do all the hachakas there, chitznius. Hachofer should never draw attention to anybody. If for whatever reason it does, it does.
So, no, so it's be a hefesh when they're alone to a hefesh when there's a lot of people.
We're a little bit maker about certain things when there are people around, but not everything. Like, let's say the issue of handing things to one another, that applies even to other people around.
That you should avoid because it's, you know.
It's just. We obviously try to keep a chazidah as tenu as possible. We don't want to announce the world which Israel is not in Nida. Moshe said that means you shouldn't go out of your way to make a fuss, to draw attention, but you observe whatever the halacha is. If for whatever reason some people find that, so be it. In the days of Chazal, they used to have the practice of wearing big day nidus, that the woman would wear different clothing when she was in nidus. Not a din, it was a minhag in the days of Chazal. So when she wore different clothing, everybody knew that she was in nidus. That's what Moshe brings a raya, that it says in Shulchan Aruch that tas devel tefilasa, that a woman is not supposed to announce that she's going to the mikveh. Because that's very big breach of tznius if everybody knows which is going to the mikveh. So what Moshe writes, what that means is she shouldn't go walking around yapping and telling her friends she's going to the mikveh tonight. But if she observes a chuznida normally and somebody realizes that somebody sees her driving into the mikveh, so what do you do? So that's she's allowed to do whatever is normal. She's not allowed to go out of her way to try to advertise what she's doing. But if she's doing what she's supposed to be doing, and somebody finds out, so she doesn't have to feel bad about that. So Rav Moshe brings a raya. He says, in the days of Chazal, they used to wear big day nidus. Again, we don't do that anymore, but that was the practice of the days of Chazal. So when she went to the mikveh, she took off the big day nidus. So everybody realized this woman just must have gone to the mikveh last night. So Moshe says, so why is that called? She's mefarsemes that she went to the mikveh. Now mefarsemes anything. She's doing what she's supposed to be doing. She is wearing, not wearing, she's doing normal things. If somebody else is being nosy and figuring out, not being tenu about it. So that's not our problem. In the days of Chazal, there was also a little bit less of a stigma, so to speak, in terms of not that there's a stigma today either, but a little bit less of embarrassment in terms of Chazidah, because Chazidah didn't only have to do with her husband. In the days of Chazal, before the days of Chazal, when the women were keeping taharas and there was truma around the house, there was Masashen Yerushalayim, there were kabanas, so it was important to know who was tamei, who was tahar. So the women would go to the mikveh, little girls would also go to the mikveh, young unmarried girls would also go to the mikveh, men would also go to the mikveh all the time. So going to the mikveh wasn't associated just with marriage, so it didn't have the connotation of a lack of tznius. It was just part of general, normal Jewish religion. So there was a little bit less of that tznius angle, including going to the mikveh. That's what we always make when they... And all these archaeological digs in Eretz Yisrael, they always dig up these mikvahs. They find this in mikvah in Masada, there's a mikvah here. There were 15 mikvahs in the old city, and there are so many mikvahs all over the place. So the people who are not, the archaeologists who are not from, who are not of, they don't understand every other, how many mikvahs did you need? So the answer is, you need a lot of mikvahs, because every time someone had to go to the mikvah, especially if you're in Yerushalayim, you want to eat Maaseh Shem, you want to eat Kachim. People had mikvahs in their own backyard. They weren't the most elaborate mikvahs. They weren't multi-million-dollar structures like we do with Manazeh. They were shuto kevshor, the holes in the wall, holes in the ground. But there were still many, many mikvahs, because in the olden days you couldn't function without mikvahs all around. That was just normal practice of Jewish religion. So you had to go to the mikvah all the time. Okay, so again, so we have the three surim of Mezikas Akos, whatever that means, Bizmanazah. We have a Tosamit, whatever that means, Bizmanazah. And then you have a Rechetzpon of a Raglov, whatever that means, Bizmanazah as well. There is another discussion in the Rishonim as to exactly how long the Harchokas last for. So what do you mean how long they last for? They last for until she gets the period, until she goes to the mikvah. So that's what we would say, and that's probably what the answer is. But there were some Rishonim who opened up the possibility that maybe during the days of Yemei Libuna, during the days of Koshiv and Nikiyim, maybe we're a little bit more makil. She's not actively bleeding. Maybe we can be a little bit more makil in the Hachokas, which is a very, very strange thing. Why should we be making like this? So if you take a look at the 19th of the Mar Makomos, so there's a Rashi that sounds that way a little bit. Rashi, the first of the Mar Makomos, the 19th page of the Mar Makomos, Hachokas may leave one. The Gemara says in Ksubis that even though she's not supposed to present him the cup of wine, but if she does it with her left hand, that's okay. So on the spot, Rashi writes, in the first of the Mar Makomos, the top of page 19, Umashi Pirish Temechva Lebiyana Desmola, be mainly Buna. So Rashi sticks in, seemingly unnecessary, into the sugi. When the Gemara says that she can serve him with a left hand, Rashi says, these are talking about during the days of Shivanikim, Yimei Buna, the day that she's wearing white. Remember we spoke about in the past, why Chazal called them Yimei Libun. Shivanikim are called, in Chazal sometimes the two terms are used interchangeably, Yimei Libun. Why are they called Yimei Libun? So some say because she's Mukhayev to wear white at that time. She has to wear white underwear at that time. And other Rishon say, there's no chiv to wear white. They called you may leave it. Leave it means the lashon clean. It means that she's waiting. It's a synonym for the phrase Shivanakim. We call it Shivanakim. You may leave it. It's all the same thing. So Rashi sticks into that Gemara that kula was said, we may leave it. The mashvashesh lahokal, we may leave it, we may nidusa. It sounds a little bit from Rashi that we could be a little bit more makil about the Archakas after the 7 days of Nidus are really over, while she's in the middle of counting Shiva Nikiyim, we could be a little bit more makil. The Chema Tzidah Barakamah de Shabbos, and Tosis says that we have a precedent for this in the story of Masech HaShabbos. Remember, we spoke about the story several times of the Talmud who unfortunately died young, and his wife was so distraught, and she came to talk to the Tanoim about it, and Eliyahu Navi about it, the whole story. And basically it came out that in the discussion with the wife that the husband had not been so careful in some of the hachakas, but he wasn't as careful in the days of Shiva Nikiyim. It was more machmer in the regular days, not machmer in the days of Shiva Nikiyim. So the Gemara says, "Val uvda sheveis Eliyahu dekomu ben yudusayich mau etzlech, meili bunayich mau etzlech." He says that the Gemara sounds like there's a difference in huchas hachakas between the Yemei Nidus and the Yemei Libun. So Tosa says this is a very, very startling thing, because the Maisa, she's still a Nida. So she goes to the mikvah, she's a Nida Gemur Min HaTorah. So why in the world should there be any difference whatsoever? So Tosa says that the reason for this seeming distinction between the 2 days, says Tosa, near and I regium litvo acha shiva l'ri'ya kishiposekes la sirahash te elamid rabbanan. Says this is a throwback to the old days. So Ben Tam already said this in other contexts. It's a throwback to the old days, where if you remember Min HaTorah, so a woman can become a nida, and then she's a nida for 7 days, and after the 7 days are up, then she goes to the mikvah. But the Rabbanan, this man said, we wait a whole shiva nikiyim. We're afraid maybe she's a zava, maybe she's a gedola. All the things we spoke about in the past. But very, very often, midaraisa, after the 7 days of nidus arova, she could really go to the mikvah. Nobody would do that, bisman is that, but in theory she could. So there was a practice in the old days that a woman would go to the mikvah twice. She would go to the mikvah at the end of the first week to become tahora midaraisa. Why would she do that? She's not going to be with her husband anyway. Maybe fataras, maybe tila bisman a mitzvah, maybe there are other reasons why. She would go to the mikvah at the end of the 7 days, and then she would still refrain from being with her husband. She would then go to the mikvah a second time at the end of the next group of 7 days, after the Shivani Kids. That was a practice that's been out of practice right about 1800 years. It's been a long time since women did this. But at one time in history, it would appear that the woman would actually go to the mikveh twice. So if that's the case, then theoretically during Shem Nikim, she's only a Surah Midrabbanan. So if she's only a Surah Midrabbanan, then we can begin to kvetch and say, well, it's only a Nisa Midrabbanan, maybe some of the chokas are a little bit lifted, a little bit lighter during that time. But then it says about Bizmanazah, She'ain regidus lifalacha Shem Nikim. Nobody goes to the mikvah. We would never let a woman go to the mikvah after the Shiva Yom Deraisa Bizmanazah. It would be a terrible mikshal. She would think she could be with a husband at that point. We would never sanction that. So for us, in chiluf ben yiminidus tulimei libun, can be the mishnah zeh b'shabbos tia b'ni dasa b'aviyasad yachet of the mayim until she goes to the mikvah. She's a need the gemurah min haTorah. So therefore, for us on the third day of Shemakim and the first day of Nid, it's all the same thing. Everything's nisa derais nisa kares, and therefore all the archachas are going to apply. So it was a theoretical distinction that existed at one time in history, and the Maisa doesn't apply. That's what the Shulchan Aruch writes in the Sefer Nemar Mekomas. Kol Eilu Rachokos Tzach Mahaki Beim Meidusa Beim Meivuna Sheim Kolim Meisvirasa VeEin Chilup Kol Eilu Ben Ruamamish Mosis Kesem. There's no difference whether she's in the Raisa, whether it's a Kesem. It's all the same. All the Rachokos apply. So then the Ramah quotes a strange minute. V'yesh Olam VeEin Lahachlus Meivuna Binyan Isra Chilu Imo Bekaara VeChinogin Lahokol Bozev Yesh Lahachmir. Ramah quotes from the Mordechai, the name of the Ravya, that there used to be some who are makil that they're allowed to eat together during the Shiva Nikim. Where did this come from? We just got finished saying Pemalin, that the Zman Hazeh, there's no chiluk whatsoever. So the answer where this probably came from was as follows. Probably came as follows. Remember when it came to eating together, we were very not convinced that there's real Isra of eating together, Bizman Hazeh altogether. The whole thing was very, very shaky. They're not eating together. Because the Mishnah says they can't eat together, but half the Rishon say, Ram says it's only the eating from the same bowl, and the Rosh says only the eating on a very, very small, intimate, cozy table. Stop, they're eating together. I'm eating one side, the wife's sitting 6 feet away, and the other end of the table. So many Rishon held that was never included in the Isra altogether. I'm meaning is lach. We try to refrain any eating together in any shape or form. We wouldn't sanction as manazeh, but it's probably more of a chumrah than it is mikir adin. Because of that, there was a minig that existed in the late Rishonim quote, the Chacham quote, that they used to do as follows: that on the last day of Shiva Nikiyim, the woman's about to go to the mikvah. It's lunchtime. So there used to be a minig that the husband and wife would eat together. They would go out of their way. He would come home for lunch. They would have a special meal together. Why? What was the purpose? She's going to the mikvah later. What was the purpose? Just to get her back into the mood. To get things back into. You know, she's been very distant from the husband. Many rabbanim recommend this kind of a thing. I don't know. We would necessarily recommend eating lunch together, but this is not such a bad idea. That the woman's feeling a little bit distant sometimes. You know, it's good psychologically that he should spend a little time. You give show a little extra affection on the seventh day of Shiva Nikim. Not anything overboard, not anything that's absurd, but it should be something that should encourage her. Especially if you think about the day the Chazal was so hard to go to the mikvah. He's cracking ice on the frozen lake. It was such a mysterious nefesh. We read stories about a great grandma in the trial for hours and in the frozen wastelands to get to the mikvah. There was a lot of mysterious nefesh. So one can imagine that if the woman wasn't so excited, if she wasn't in such a good mood, she wouldn't want to go to the mikvah. So the Rabbanah would encourage the husband to be a little bit nicer, a little more affectionate on the seventh day. Again, Isurim you can't violate, but things that are not Isurim, so we can be more encouraging of doing. So eating together between you and me is probably not this altogether. The whole thing is not true. It's not a small cozy table. It's not eating from the same bowl. The whole thing is not chumrah. We followed that chumrah the whole week of Shiva Nikim, the whole week of Nidus, but Nikra did is probably okay. So therefore, there was some rabbanim who sanctioned a practice of eating together lunch on the seventh day as an encouragement that say you come home from work in the middle of the day, he'll eat a nice lunch with her. Speak a little bit nicer now, or encourage her to go to the mikvah, and show it. So they were makeling that on the seventh day. One can imagine what happened. Oh, they were makeling the seventh day, we can make on the sixth day, and on the fifth day, and on the fourth day. So all of a sudden, our minig betel started that during Shiva Nikim, you're allowed to eat together. So he said, if you take a look at the Shach, the next in the Ma'am Kermes, the Shach describes how this minig developed. Amma matzasi agav and Mordechai b'shem Rav Yoh, v'zel shalom. Achi imei libun leik hergel aveira, v'tov lechol ima kidei shetirza litvol. in Michal Litvel, I got it. Quotes, that's a good idea. Quotes from the Agos Mordechai, we encourage this from the Rav Yehuda, we encourage them to eat together. The Alzera Isi Mekid Meili Mula, he says that's how the minig developed, mistakenly to permit it the whole week. The Enyel Nistochazet, Rav Yehuda Yochim Bezeh. So some say that the Rav Yehuda was wrong, we shouldn't even follow the Rav Yehuda. But some say, no, the Rav Yehuda was okay. It's also, it's in the day, the seventh day in the afternoon, it's unlikely they're going to be chaytif, first of all, it's the daytime. And second of all, she's going to the mikvah in a few hours, so it's unlikely to be chaytif. V'gam zu svar klushahi. Says, even the Rav Yehuda was a shvera tula. He says the bottom line is that even the Mekilim were only Mekil on the seventh day in the afternoon. It's not really an Isser anyway, but to be Mekil all week, so it's not right. Anyway, the bottom line is we don't have this Midig anymore. People are not Mekil anymore in the Jewish Shabbat. People are not Mekil on the seventh day either. But the thing is, the idea that the Rav Yehuda instituted is a good idea. Whether it should play out in terms of eating together, most husbands don't have the luxury of coming home from work in the middle of the day to eat lunch with their wives on the seventh day of Shemini Kiyam. The wives are at work also, so that doesn't play out. But I think that the idea is an important idea, that the husband should be cognizant, should be sensitive on the last day of Shemini Kiyam. Even though Baruch Hashem, as Manas said, the mikvahs are a little bit less challenging and stressful than they were in the olden days. So in the olden days, they felt they had to be mocked as something that was almost an issur. We don't have to do that, but the idea is still right. So a nice kind word on the seventh day, a nice encouragement, a nice something around that indicates to the wife that you're looking forward, I think is definitely part of the spirit of this minig that exists in some of the Rishonim that goes a long way. So again, in terms of being matam, mamish yisurim, that we're not going to do, but in terms of encouraging and being sensitive as the woman's getting ready to the mikvah, I think some of you can extract from this a nice word. That was awesome.